Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Freshly Booked on One Radio. Join us as we interview authors just beginning their literary journey. It doesn't matter how their book is published, the world agrees being a published author is a big step. We want to celebrate and spotlight these writers whose words were brought into the hands of readers. Listen in as they talk about their new experiences and join us in jubilation for those who are freshly booked.
Greetings. It is Sunday afternoon, and I am your guest host, W.T. Prater. Jennifer couldn't be here today, so she asked me to fill in for her, which I happily did. And today is our featured author. We have with us Leslie Hatchell. I hope I said it right. Please tell me I said it right.
You said it right. Yeah. Yes, great.
Awesome. Victory is mine. Okay. So, now that we got that obstacle out of the way. Hi, Leslie.
Ever.
Welcome to Freshly Booked. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on the air.
Awesome. Well, why don't you start off telling people a little bit about yourself as an author?
It started a long time ago. I was about to clean my house, actually, and I thought, you know, I can either change these sheets or I can write a book. I have no idea where the thought came from. This is a true story. And I sat down and I for like a whole weekend and I wrote a book. Terrible book. It was an illegible book, but it was a book all the same. And I was hooked. It's like, this is what I want to do. And I
So then the next question becomes automatically, so did you ever get around to changing the sheets? Or did they just...
No, I didn't. I do not live in squalor, but thanks.
That's good. So I want to know about this horrible book, because we can talk about Texas Summer, but I want to talk about the horrible book first.
It was awful. It was just, I don't know where it came from. It was, I think it was supposed to be a paranormal. I have no idea what happened to it. It was, and I don't know why I thought it was, you know, as you're writing something, you don't really get the overview. You don't really see the work until it's done. And then I went back and read it and thought, oh, God, terrible. But, so that's
so
all there was.
So when you write, are you more of a pantser or are you more of a plotter?
Oh, pantser, absolutely. The characters, I sort of draw them in stick figures and they take off.
So tell us a little bit about your first release, and that is called Texas Summer. And if you want to find out more information about it, there should be a buy link on this episode page. And within the next few days, we'll have it up on the writersonlinenetwork.com website as well. But tell us a little bit about Texas Summer.
Well, Texas Summer actually started out as a screenplay. And I sold it, but it was not produced. And so the rights reverted back to me. And I looked at it one day and I thought, this would make a good book. This would be, I could do more with this as a novel. And so I proceeded to sit down and write it. And Kennedy, the heroine, is sort of close to my heart because she's an outcast. And her family, most of her family except for her mother, they want nothing to do with her, and they try to pin all these terrible things on her. And she has a white knight show up, his car breaks down in town, and he's her ally, and he loves her and he works to save her. And I love that idea.
Oh, absolutely.
I love the fairy tale. And that's pretty
much... So if somebody were to ask you, what is the twist? Like, what is the thing that you feel like makes Texas Summer stand out? Why do people need to read this book before they read anything by Nora Roberts?
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, the woman's produced 200 books. For heaven's sake, she's, you know...
Yeah.
There's no comparison. But... The thing about Texas Summer is that it's sort of a journey of self-discovery for for Kennedy, for the heroine, and she comes into her own because somebody believes in her. And again, it's a good thing. There's so much in the headlines about bullying, and she was actually bullied in a way, not on the computer, not in the way that we, you know, sort of understand it, but it's still the same principle, and she rises above it. She sticks to her gun. She has her principles, and I like her. You know, you start out and you wonder, you think, but you end up really liking her. That's how I felt about it. So
you've got to be in love with your own characters in order to convince an audience to fall in love with them. Absolutely.
Or hate them.
Or hate them. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the nice thing is that I always say I can kill as many people as I want on a daily basis and not go to jail. It's great.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. I mean, there's a reason why the T-shirt about don't ever piss off an author because they'll kill you in a book.
That's
very
right.
True.
Yes.
It's therapy, you know. So.
It is. And
so
go ahead.
When you were trying to figure out how you were going to go about getting your baby out into the world, tell us a little bit about why you chose the press that you did.
Well, when you sit in your room and you produce something and you look at it and you say, first of all, you have to get past that obstacle you get in your own way. And you say, does anybody really want to read this? And then for me, I had to get to the point where I said, well, I'll never know unless I try. And my husband, bless his heart, says, don't quit. Just don't quit. Just keep at it. And so I went through various presses and various publishers and tried to find a publisher that was compatible, that would understand what I was trying to say and would appreciate it and want to publish it. And Secret Cravings did that. And to see your work in print, just to hear comments, to see reviews, is unbelievable. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's exciting.
Speaking of that, I'm curious. So when you're going after reviews, obviously not every review you get is going to be a sparkling 5-star best thing I've ever read review. How do you handle the not so friendly reviews?
This is the most subjective business in the world. And I mean, when you send out your work, you'll have people say, you know, get a real job, you have no talent. And then you'll have other people say you're Hemingway. So, it's so subjective that some are going to love it and some are going to hate it. And that's the way it goes. It would be nice if everybody loved it. And actually, on Amazon, I have 5 5-star reviews, which makes me pretty happy. But I'm
Absolutely.
Sure there. I mean, you know, but people will not like it, and that's their prerogative. I read voraciously, and I don't love every book I read, and you
right.
know, or I'll love parts of it and not others of it, and that's just the way it goes. It's nobody likes criticism. You know, nobody does.
Yeah.
But I like constructive criticism. If somebody will say to me, well, I wish you'd done this, then I think about that and maybe I'll put that into my next book.
Yeah. Now, you are actually working on your second book. It's already pretty much, and I think you'd said previously that you decided to go the self-pub route on this.
What's the biggest difference?
Right. What's the biggest difference between going through a house and deciding to do the self-publication route?
Going through a house is so much easier. They do all the work for you. I mean, really, you go through a house and they do the cover. If you look at the cover for Texas Summer, it's beautiful. And the covers that are done from these professional publishers are wonderful. And the editing, I mean, my editor for my second book was amazing. And traditional publishers do that for you. And I think that certainly if you're going to self-publish, it would be great to do a traditional publication first to get the experience to you know, understand the process, because it's when going into this business, it's not really what you expect it to be. There are lots of surprises. And when you self-pub, they ask things and you say, oh, well, I don't know how to do that. Somebody did
right.
that for me. So it's a lot harder. And so you need to understand all the ramifications of self-pubbing. So, and yeah. I think, too, because you're the only one responsible, you really need to be judicious about your editor and make sure that it really is your best work that's going out there.
So how do you feel about publishers or authors out there who feel like, you know, they do a novel and they're pretty much done, and they send it to somebody to have it edited, and then they fight their editor on edits? Because we come across that, unfortunately, more frequently than, you know, should happen. What are
I'm
your
sorry,
feelings? Please. What's your advice to authors who have a tendency to fight against editors?
Well, you're fighting against yourself. Because, and I mean, you really are. The editor's job is to make you look good. And if you fight that, I mean, there's only one thing I fought my editor for in Texas Summer, and I used it was a word, and the word was matcha. She felt matcha, which is the female form of macho. She said, well, that's not a word. And I said, that's poetic license. Let me have my word. That's the only thing that I thought about, because in that context I felt it was important. But, you know, so pick your battles. If there's something that your editor wants to get rid of that you think is integral in the book, then have a discussion. But, and I know there are writers out there who just say, well, don't touch my work. Well, that's crazy, because a single vision is just that, a single vision, and you're always better off with other opinions. And that's not to say to change the integrity of your work. That's just to enhance it and improve it. And that's their job.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I think that that's something that a lot of new writers really need to hear, is that you're looking at your work from one perspective, and, you know, your editor is looking at it from a perspective of how the world is going to perceive it. Or at least a good editor is going to do that. So,
right. And,
now, I want to ask you, when you were... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, in the submission process, you're going to get a lot of opinions. Like, many people will say, well, I don't like that you have this character, you know. And unless you're getting something specific, for example, unless an editor says, or a publisher says to you, if you change this, I will offer you a contract, then it's up to you. I mean, that, and to not make that change would be cutting off your nose to spite your face, I think. So.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Now, when you were making the decision about getting your writing out there, I think that writing is such a solitary, it's such a solitary profession. Did you feel that it was important to join other writing groups, or did you kind of continue the solo road, or how did you go about dealing with that particular aspect?
Oh, well, RWA is wonderful. I mean, it's just wonderful. Mm-hmm. And there's so many options. There are so many kinds of support. I found my first critique partner through RWA. There are forums. There's information that writers are very generous. You know, they really are. And if you ask another writer with more experience to tell you, to help you do something, they'll do it. And it's incredible. And then I joined a local group. And from there, I have a core group of writers that I meet with every 2 weeks. And sometimes we'll just, you know, have lunch. And other times we'll talk about publishing experiences and editing experiences and plot development, and it's amazing. It's invaluable to have that kind of support. And writers speak a unique language, and to be with other writers is wonderful.
Now, when you were doing research for Texas Summer, what does that entail? What kind of research did you do for this book?
Well, I lived in New Mexico, so it was an easy transition to the Texas desert. But generally, keep asking the question, what did we ever do without Google? How did we live without Google?
Yeah, I love Google. Google is my best friend.
Yes, and for the second book and for the my fourth book, actually, I went to the library, which was kind of strange because people don't do that anymore. But that was I love research personally. Texas Summer is a contemporary, so it didn't require the research that my book set in the Civil War required. But anytime you quote something, anytime you do something in context, to me it's very important that it's right, because otherwise it takes people out of the story.
Absolutely. Now, when you were figuring out who was going to be your audience for this book, how did you decide what genre you were going to write in, or do you feel like the genre just came to you even before you were trying to figure out your audience?
Yeah, I'm a pantser. I write the book. I sat down, I wrote the book, and then I thought, then I decided. And that's happened every single time. It's like at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll wake up and say, I want to do this is what I want to write about, or that's what I want to, you know. And so then it just sort of flows. And when I'm done with it, I'll sometimes have to go back and tweak it and make it belong somewhere. But
yeah.
the initial book just sort of is there.
And you mentioned your husband. What did he think? Has he read your book? Like, has he been involved in your process at all?
Yeah, well, he's an engineer, so it's sort of like,
gotcha.
But he loves Texas Summer. I mean, it's his. He's read my work, all my work, and Texas Summer is his favorite. He loves the characters. He loves everything about it, and I think it's more because he likes the contemporary. I think he relates better to the contemporary, but he's my. You know, my best cheerleader. It's wonderful. And it's, I don't know
That's
how people do it
awesome.
Without that. Yeah.
So I'm just kind of curious, when it comes to the characters that you develop for your first book and for books beyond that, have you ever had somebody in real life that was either inspiration for one of your heroes or one of your villains?
Yes.
Ooh, do tell. That sounds juicy.
Well, there's always that. There are always good people and bad people in everybody's life, and so you draw from that. And it's in my books, it's an amalgam. It's like a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and this good quality and that evil, and you know, and so it's no one person in particular, but it's the people you know and the people you see and. It sort of comes that way rather than somebody, it's not modeled after someone specific.
What's interesting is right now in my head, I don't know if you're familiar with the Joss Whedon show, A Dollhouse, but one of the elements in this show is that they have the ability to take this trait from this person and this trait from this person and then make them into an amalgam of that person. And that's kind of the visual that I'm getting in my head right now. I'm imagining you making your own dolls, which is kind of cool.
Yes. Yeah, and it's really fun. It is. Because you can, I mean, and many times, though, I mean, in my experience, because I'm a pantser, the characters do something that doesn't seem in character, and then I reexamine their character. Well, maybe they would do this. And so then I have to build on that because they took that action, I have to justify it. And if I can justify it, it stays. And if I can't justify it, it goes.
Yeah. But it, sometimes it becomes, I don't know about for you, but for me, it's a difficult battle sometimes because you have that one scene or that one character that you fall in love with over the process of writing a story or a book, and it's just really hard to say goodbye to that one character or that one scene. What do you do in that situation?
I copy it, I paste it, I print it, and I put it aside, and I'm going to use it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Just like all my little notes. Because if I love it that much, it has value, to me at least. And so I don't want to get rid of it, but I also don't want to destroy the integrity of the story I'm telling by having something that doesn't belong. So
absolutely.
I'll just take it out and save it.
Absolutely. That makes total sense. Now, I want to ask you, you said that Texas Summer actually started off as a screenplay. Why did you decide to make this transition from a screenplay into writing a novel?
Well, when I wrote the screenplay, I was living in Los Angeles, and so nobody wrote novels in Los Angeles. Forgive me, Los Angeles writers.
I totally agree.
And once I moved, and you know, now being in Tennessee, Texas Summer was not the first book that I wrote, and I'd written two other books prior to that, but it always stayed in my heart, and I was always sad that it never became a movie because it had that potential. And that, so one day the screenplay was actually in my writing room, and I looked at it, and that's when I thought, this could be a book. I can do more with it. I can make these characters bigger, and you know, and there's more I have to say. And it really flowed, you know. It went from 100 pages to almost three times that, and it was pretty easy because it was in my heart. The hard work was done.
Yeah. So what do you do in a situation? I know that, you know, I've encountered, as many of our listeners do as well. What do you do when you feel like a character stops talking to you? How do you approach a story at that point?
Then there has to be a reason. And I want to know why. And I'm one of those people that, you know, my friends say that I say what other people think. So I would sit that character down and say, okay, what's going on? Just tell me, talk to me. And if I'm getting nothing in response, and obviously this is in the imagination, if I'm getting no response, then there's something flawed in the character. So I either have to reexamine what I've created or create a different character. When I was writing my fourth novel, I wrote the first probably 40 pages and created characters in those 40 pages. And I went back and looked at it and said, oh, this is awful. This one doesn't belong. And that one, oh, no, yeah, you got to go. And I got down to the base story and the heroine, the heroine. And it's like I started all over again.
So are there any genres? Now, your first book is, you said it was a contemporary. And the other book, I believe you said, was a historical, correct?
Right, yes.
Okay. Are there any genres that you want to write in that you have yet to write in?
I'm just starting a medieval paranormal. And
okay.
I've not ventured there before, and it's kind of fun. There are things I don't think I don't write inspirational, and I don't write erotica. It's just, I just don't. And I don't write some of the true paranormal, like the werewolves and the vampires, it just doesn't sing to me. But the one I'm starting, it touches on the paranormal. I like that.
So who are some of your influences when you talk about writers who you really want to emulate? Who would be at the top of your list?
Kathleen Woodworth. She was my first. And it's funny because everyone will tell you that she would not sell today. And that's probably true. And Jude Devereaux. They break the rules. You know, Jude Devereaux is still obviously writing, but some of her earlier work, and Kathleen Woodworth. Kathleen Woodworth changed the face of romance writing. And I read her books. Well, she took the characters and she gave them such depth, and she did such detail with history. And you have to kind of read, if you've read other books that were published at the same time, they're completely different. It's almost defies description. But for example, in Ashes in the Wind, which is her Civil War book, you're there. The description, and again, people will tell you she wouldn't sell today because it's too verbose. It's too much description, and, you know, I find them wonderful. And she inspired me. Reading her work inspired me to want to write romance.
Well, I mean, I think my argument in that is it thinks that an author is too verbose. Number one, that's their voice. And,
right.
You know, trying to change somebody else's voice is not going to usually work out very effectively. But, I mean, you look at Stephen King. Stephen King has sold millions and millions and millions, and nobody can ever accuse Stephen King of being one of those people that just, like, gets to the point of the matter. I mean,
no, exactly.
Everything he's written is, I love Stephen King with all my heart and soul, but he can spend 5 pages describing a door that has nothing to do with the story whatsoever. So.
And here's the exception that breaks the rule, and that's it. When you're Stephen King, when you're Nora Roberts, you can do anything you want. And that's,
mm-hmm.
I would love to be that liberated but then again, I am I good enough? I don't know. You know, I hope someday to be that good, but I hope to have that many fans. But you have to, you know, it's like they talk about art. You have to be classically trained in art before you can throw paint at a canvas and call it a masterpiece. You know, you have to understand the rules before you can break them.
Not only that, but you have to be willing to be in it for the long haul. And I think that if you're an author and you've been in the game for 5-10 years, you may get success. It may happen because it does, but those are generally the exceptions. They're not the rules. You look at somebody like Stephen King or Nora Roberts or, you know, countless authors that probably didn't even get a whole lot of notice until they were already, you know, 10, 15 years old as a writer. So you got to be in it for the long haul. This is not a quick race to run.
It's like I remember an interview with a writer who wrote a magazine article, and the magazine article was like 2 pages long. And he was interviewed, and the interviewer was trying to be sarcastic, and she said, "Okay, we know you got paid a lot of money for this article. Tell me, really, how long did it take you to write it?" And the writer replied, "All my life."
Yep. Well, we are getting down to our last minute or so of the show. I want you to give I want to give everybody the opportunity to know where they can find you online.
My website is LeslieHatchell.com, and that's H-A-C-H-T-E-L. And my books are at all major sites, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at Secret Cravings Publishing. But if you want more updates, LeslieHatchell.com. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter.
Awesome. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for joining us today on Freshly Booked. Thank you to everybody out there who's listening to this episode. Like I said, make sure that you check out Texas Summer for that on the episode page, and it'll be up on writersonlinenetwork.com. Please visit us there and find out what you can do with the network around you. Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful Sunday afternoon.
Thanks so much.